possibly the best matchup of the young season, Mahomes and the Chiefs host that dominant Jaguars defense. We're breaking it down, as well as Vikings and Eagles in the NFC title game rematch, the Battle of Texas on Sunday night, and we have the mailbag, including the question, what would you trade for Justin Tucker? It's all on the MMQB NFL Deep Dive Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Deep Dive Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. We have a couple of big ones in Week 5 here, Andy, including that, I'll just say, Jaguars-Chiefs is like the dream matchup right now. Maybe Jaguars-Rams or Chiefs-Rams, but something about the defense of the Jaguars against the speed and the firepower of the Chiefs is just, this game is absolutely delicious.
Absolutely. It's the AFC's best offense versus the AFC's best defense, maybe the NFL's best offenses and defenses. And it'll be a lot of fun to see. The Patrick Mahomes hype, I absolutely understand it. I am contributing to it. All you can do is tap the brakes at this point because there's nothing more you can say about the guy. No, you can't heap more praise on him. So we probably, Gary, need to discuss what's the appropriate way to tap the brakes? What does the future look like from here? Remember, at Kansas City last year, their offense, it wasn't like this, but they started 5-0, and they were all this misdirection. Oh, they're wonderful, and Andy Reid's a genius. And they went 5-7 after that and were very average. So it's a one-week-at-a-time thing, and this is by far their biggest test. But yet again, here they are getting another cover three defense, too. They play these styles of defense every week, it seems like.
Well, what we're starting with that game, obviously, in case you can figure it out. Jaguars, Chiefs. What happened Monday night? What were the Broncos able to do? The Broncos, they contained Patrick Mahomes. Now, granted, Patrick Mahomes threw for 304 yards and a touchdown and a comeback victory in week one this year. We'd all be really excited about Patrick Mahomes. The fact that he didn't put up otherworldly numbers in this game and the fact that the Chiefs had to come back and it was a sort of skin of their teeth win. Is there anything the Broncos did differently to relatively contain this Chiefs offense?
I there was an aggressiveness to what they did and the way they played. We think of it like man coverage or zone coverage. There's a lot of overlap in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And some teams employ man principles or they play it like man out of their zone. They're physical. They remember, no area of the field has ever caught a pass in the history of football. Men catch passes. So your zones are relative to the man you're trying to guard within your zone. And I think the Broncos took that principle pretty well on Monday night. With the Chiefs and all the smoke and mirrors and window dressing they do, when you have matchup principles in what you're doing, that does minimize the impact of the smoke and mirrors stuff because you're worried about your guy rather than the big picture of things. And that's what teams did last year. When we said Kansas City got average in the second half of the season, more teams started playing man-to-man against them. So I think there was a matchup feel to what Denver did. The interesting thing, Gary, is Jacksonville, they're not really a matchup defense. They're so fast in zone coverage that they almost don't have to match up at times because they converge on areas so quickly and they close down windows so quickly. But I would imagine they're going to want to be a little bit more assertive and have those, at least have the corners up on those wide receivers this week.
Yeah, I mean, Tyreek Hill wasn't a big downfield factor in that Monday night game. Travis Kelce got off to a slow start before he hit the big second half. I guess that's what, in a way, made it even more terrifying was it was a reminder that Chiefs can run the ball too. I mean, they had 142 in that game against a very good Broncos run defense. But yeah, I mean, if you are the Jaguars, and it's going to be no Leonard Fournette this week, you know, we've talked about on the show, Blake Bortles throwing on early downs has sort of been the MO, and that's where they're finding success. The Chiefs struggled so badly to stop the Broncos running game, which isn't an overpowering, overwhelming rushing attack. If you're the Jaguars, you go back to that. Do you go back to sort of pounding it on first and second down and manageable third down, kind of what the Broncos did last week when Case Keenum was not particularly good in that game?
That's an interesting question. I think the answer in a vacuum would be yes. That's a good idea because Kansas City's run defense is it's a snap-to-snap proposition. You never know what you're going to get with those guys, mm-hmm. and Denver exploited that at times. And that fits Jacksonville's profile, of course. And I don't think Fournette's injury, frankly, is a huge deal. I think the running game can function fine with Yeldon and Grant in there. So that's the yes part of the vacuum answer. What makes you pause about that, though, is Blake Bortles is so comfortable when you have him throw on early downs. And there's a big difference between throwing in run-pass situations and throwing in obvious passing situations. And you've got to have Blake Bortles comfortable if you're going to sustain offense for Jacksonville. So I wouldn't go in saying we have to pound the rock, but I certainly would go in saying that's important with the idea that we need to leverage that into some downfield shots for our play-action game, which is what they do every single week. That's what Nathaniel Hackett has done as their coordinator. He's done a very good job with that. And the other thing he does a good job with, Gary, and it's going to come into play in this game, because Kansas City, they're a matchup defense big time. They mm-hmm. almost all their zones look like man-to-man by the way they play out.
Let's move on. We have Vikings-Eagles NFC title game rematch back in Philadelphia. Two teams combined 3 wins this year. Andy, I will just ask it straight up here. Is there something wrong with the Vikings defense?
By their standards, yes. The linebackers are not playing as well, especially in coverage. And it's not just Anthony Barr getting beat in the Rams game, which everybody saw, and the Rams did a great job of exploiting him mm-hmm. and attacking him by their designs. There have been guys, Michael Kendricks dropped a late responsibility in zone coverage against Buffalo that turned into a huge gain for the Bills. That was a big play in that game.
Eric
Barr was... thank you. Yes, Michael Kendricks has other issues these days in zone coverage. Eric Kendricks dropped that. And then Barr has not been good in other weeks either with some of his underneath zone assignments. So what we have now is a weakness, and it's a correctable weakness because we know these are good players, but this did not exist last year. When you put on Vikings film, you're an opponent, you're getting ready for them. There weren't areas of their defense where you said, hey, that's where we got to exploit. That's what we're going to build our plan around. They didn't have that. They do now. Those linebackers have been liabilities, and their corners aren't playing great either. So overall, it's not a confident defense, and Everson Griffin's absence, that doesn't help anything either.
Yeah, well let's look at the other side of the it's the same side of the ball, but it's the other side of the line of scrimmage here. Carson Wentz 2 games back. This Eagles offense hasn't exactly, they're not what they were with Wentz last October or September or anything like that. I mean, they kind of have issues of their own at this point. Are they going to be able to take advantage of some of the problems the Vikings are having in coverage right now?
Let's deal with the Wentz side of this first, because there's some rumblings. How is he coming off the knee? I didn't think he was great in his first game against Indianapolis. I did think he got better over the course of that game. He looked to me like Carson Wentz last week, though, mm-hmm. Against Tennessee, especially in the first half. So that's right there. That now you've got more than a fighting chance. We're talking about an elite quarterback. So I'm optimistic for the Eagles' offense. We know their wide receivers are deficient. They don't have a lot of speed. Alshon Jeffrey's going to have to make some body post-up kind of plays, which he did a few times last week. And they're going to have to keep manufacturing offense via their tight ends and running backs. I think they'll be okay. It might not work in this game, though, because Zach Ertz, there are answers for him. Well, this is the interesting part, Gary, is Minnesota is very good at safety. We know that. Harrison Smith can match up to tight ends, and then they play a lot of zone coverage. They put both safeties in the shallow middle of the field, and that presents issues when you got a tight end. Can the Eagles find ways to get Ertz matched against those struggling linebackers instead? He's very good at uncovering late in the down or uncovering just period against zone coverage. If I'm Philadelphia, I'm really studying formations hard to figure out how can I get Ertz on those linebackers. That's their best chance. And this will probably be the name of the game for them all season long. Zach Ertz and the running game are going to have to be where they gouge teams.
Yeah, I keep on looking at Nelson Agholor and wonder if we're going to see something a little more aggressive with him like we did early last season. He has I don't know if you've seen his stat line. He has 25 catches for 167 yards this year, which is
I knew it was low per catch.
6.7 per. That's not going to do it.
Well, one thing I'm surprised they haven't done a little more of, and what makes you surprised is when they do it, you see it and you go, oh, that looks nifty, that makes sense, is some of the jet action and sweeps and misdirection stuff involving Aguilar. More teams are doing that now. It's a hard thing to contest with, and that's a great way to get – Aguilar is a rhythm type of player. If he were a basketball guy, he'd need to catch – he's a catch-and-shoot guy. He's not an ISO – get to the basket type of guy. So you've got to get him in rhythm with your designs offensively.
And other side of the ball there, look, Eagles gave up a big comeback to a Titans offense that just doesn't have a whole lot of firepower. Now they get Thielen and Diggs, and Kirk Cousins is playing well. Is Cousins going to be able to – are they going to be able to basically feast downfield against this Eagles defense that's still without Rodney McLeod?
Keep an eye on Corey Graham. He is the fill-in there. They're still playing. I got done watching the Eagles-Titans film earlier today, in fact, that three robber coverage we've talked about, which is cover three, but with the free safety down, not down lower, 10 to 12 yards off, where he's kind of a middle of the field, all things, trade, you know, all jack of all traits. They're still doing that with Corey Graham, so they're going to try it. McLeod is so much more dynamic than Graham in that sense, so just something to keep in mind. We'll see how it goes. Graham was not good in certain spots down the stretch against Tennessee, though, so the absence, and Maddox, their number three safety now, their fourth-round corner, who's now playing third safety and dime because they're down McLeod, so they're down a safety. He got beat a couple times as well, including on the game-winning touchdown last week, so that McLeod injury we thought would be big, and so far it has been big. You mix in a struggling Jalen Mills and factor in that Kirk Cousins is throwing the ball very well outside the numbers downfield right now, and he's got Diggs and he's has Thielen. This could be a tough matchup for Philadelphia. They're gonna have to rely on what they relied on when they crushed this team in the NFC Championship, which is their pass rush dictating the game.
Yeah, that's a real possibility. We kind of focus on the, you know, in this conversation so far, we focus on the skill position players, but the Eagles have a real edge up front against this Vikings offensive line.
They do. It's a better offensive line than last time when they saw these guys last time. But it's, in some ways, Gary, it might be a better Eagles deal. It hasn't been as dynamic and productive as it was a year ago, but the talent is there. I was wrong about the Michael Bennett for Vinnie Curry switch. Bennett has been an upgrade. He's not a downgrade. Mm-hmm. He's played very well. Curry has not been very visible in Tampa Bay. So you have that going. Brandon Graham, Fletcher Cox are doing their thing. Derek Barnett is a much better player now than he was as a rookie. He's going to be a top 10 defensive end at some point. So it's not showing up yet. The Eagles' D-line has not been as dominant as it was during the Super Bowl run. But all the makings are there for dominance. It's only a matter of time.
Yeah. Let's go to the Sunday nighter. This is all Texas. This is Cowboys at Texans. Let's start on the Cowboys offense here. Dak threw the ball better last week, and it seemed like, at least the big plays they got, there was a little more creativity with what they were doing, especially with Ezekiel Elliott in the passing game. Is there reason to be a little more optimistic about the Cowboys offensively?
Well, it's good. Our producer, Shelby Royston, got stuck in your guys' New York City traffic on the way here, and that gave me an extra hour to watch Dallas-Detroit film as we were waiting to record. So I have a better answer on that question now than I would have a better answer for Cowboys fans than I would have if we'd recorded at the previously scheduled time. I'm optimistic for them. Their offense went through the running game last week, which is how it has to be every single week. Their O-line responded tremendously, including Looney at center. He was very good at times, got up on Jared Davis a few times. And Prescott, he also had more responsibility at the line of scrimmage. We saw him audibling or making signals, check with me kind of things. He's very good at that. I think that gives him an ownership in the play designs. When he struggles, he doesn't play on schedule. He'll get off of reads too quickly, and he'll leave some throws on the field. But when he has responsibility and he's taking ownership of the offense and he's making signals and it's also going through the running game initially, he's a much better QB. He's a more more of a field general then. So it was a much, much better showing by Dallas against Detroit than it was against Seattle. Now they're facing a very, very good Texans defense, so a defense that gives you a lot of different looks up front. It's a defense that's weak on the back end, though. Yeah. So I guess it's weakness versus weakness. Dallas' yes. wide receivers versus Houston's secondary.
I was going to say, you know, even though the Texans got their first win last week, I think people were maybe wringing their hands a little bit about the fact that they gave up, you know, it was 34 points. I think it was 31, and that was one of those weird games where they kicked a bunch of field goals in overtime. Everyone got a field goal. So, yeah, they gave up 31 in regulation. You know, Andrew Luck ended up throwing a lot of times, but a lot of yards, 464. If you struggled to cover, though, I would think it would be a pretty welcome sight to see the Cowboys coming to town.
Yeah, it's a good way to get back on track. But, you know, coverage, too, how much do you get back on track? We could have – what do you think about this? A discussion, like, we maybe go back to the Eagles for a second because Jalen Mills is struggling at left corner for him, and that's been part of the problem in addition to what they have going on at safety. That's a zone type of scheme. I could see that. You know, how, do you get back on track as a zone defender – or are you just what you are as any kind of pass defender? Texans do a little bit more matchup zone man-to-man, so I would think if you're in zone, you could be off track but get on track. It's just a matter of reading your cues and understanding your spacing. But if you're a matchup-type defender, you play man-to-man, I would imagine to a certain degree you are what you are. So maybe Houston gets on track, but at some point Jonathan Joseph doesn't run well anymore.
Yeah.
Aaron Colvin's out injured. They're not particularly deep. At some point that's going to come home and pay a price for them.
Yeah. No, I can't believe Jonathan Joseph has started four games this year.
I thought he'd be, to his credit, he's adjusted his game very well for someone that does not run well anymore. I mean, he plays off coverage now. He still has a great sense for when the ball's in the air, how to recover. I'm impressed with Jonathan Joseph. That's a hard position to overachieve at. It's hard to hide your limitations, and he does that through smart technique, but we're still talking about limitations. Now, mm-hmm. I don't know if this is the week to expose those. Again, if you're Dallas, I guess you put Michael Gallup out there and hope he catches something. I don't like that matchup, though, for the Cowboys. This comes down to the trenches, doesn't it? Ezekiel Elliott, the O-line, versus J.J. Watt in the front seven of Houston.
I would think so. I think you feel pretty good about that if you're Houston in the year 2018. You maybe don't have great cover guys, but you got a team coming in that doesn't throw the ball very well.
The last note on the Cowboys, too, they started doing a little bit more with stack releases and bunches and switches to help their wide receivers, which is what we were saying they need to do. They're not good enough to just line up and play and spread sets and ISO routes. It's the same issue, though, we'd see with Green Bay over the years. We'd say this about Green Bay all the time. They couldn't beat man coverage. Well, you got to help them with design. You can tell the teams that haven't practiced that over the offseason, that don't have that as part of their foundation in their passing game. Part of me thinks that could be an issue with Dallas, is that they need to help their receivers, but their system, what they practiced all training camp, isn't conducive to that. And so it might be too little too late. We'll see.
Let's go. Let's go. Monday Night Football. This is Washington going to New Orleans. This was a really good game last year. They went to overtime. There were some questionable calls that went against the Redskins, and New Orleans ends up pulling this one out. I feel like this is a game where, you know, we talked about maybe in the larger scheme of things, Kirk Cousins to Alex Smith is something of a lateral move. Cousins has a little more highs and lows, whereas Smith is you know, you have less risk, but you're getting less reward. I think this is a week where they are really going to miss Kirk Cousins.
Well, first of all, my mother watched this game last year and turned it off, and she watches football while she cooks. And she told me, I think I saw her like Wednesday after that, so a few days later, and she mentioned how Washington had beaten the Saints. I said, well, no, Drew Brees came back and scored two touchdowns in the final drives, and she didn't believe me, which was really sad. That was so much fun to get. Not that I relish someone being disappointed, but she doesn't remember anyway. Drew Brees is the only player she knows. She just knows the uniform and the sound of football as she cooks.
Yeah.
That's it. To give you an idea, I grew up in a house, Gary, where my dad would make passionate – he'd walk into the room in the middle of the game, unbeknownst of which team is which. Just someone was in a dark jersey, someone in a white jersey. He had an extraordinary ability to immediately assume a rooting interest for one of those teams somehow. And then he would have passionate pleas that they should not allow defenders to strip the ball from offensive guys. He says it was against the integrity of the game. The game's about tackling, not stripping the ball. And I would tell him that's patently ridiculous. And his response would be, how would you like it if someone came and just ripped the ball away from you? How would you like it? So anyway, that's the kind of house I grew up in. But my mom still watched that game, and she missed the end of it. And so that's what I think about now is always stay with the end of these games. You don't want to be your mother in the kitchen thinking the wrong team won. Drew Brees and his comeback ability, I'll be interested to see him, you know, he's going to set the passing record in this game. Mm-hmm. But your point about Alex Smith, back to the subject, back to being on topic here. Yeah, sure, anytime.
No more about your parents. What's going on with this game?
I am confident in my stance on Alex Smith, which is, yes, there's less risk, less reward, and ultimately I don't think that's going to fit how Jay Gruden wants to play. But I need to be fair and honest here, too. After watching that Green Bay film, Alex Smith in that game made a number of the type of throws that I think he could make. His 46-yard touchdown to Richardson early mm-hmm. in the game, very decisive. I think that was a shot play versus a cover two, if I recall. And then he had another a 9-yard bullet in the red zone, a tight window timing throw to Jamison Crowder. Two illustrations of what Kirk Cousins gave him that I didn't think Alex Smith could give him. He has given it to them so far. He needs to do it a few more times. I've seen him do it every once in a while before, but this would be a good week to do it. That's a Saints defense you can go after a little bit.
Yeah, what's Marshawn Lattimore is fine. He's still good. What's been the issue with the back end of the Saints defense? And did they get it corrected to an extent last week against the Giants, or is that just a matter of Giants are really not in sync with this passing game?
Yeah, I watched that film and felt like that was more good Saints than bad Giants. I can see why there's criticism of Manning. Yeah, Manning was not fully trusting his offensive line, and that did have negative repercussions at times. So it was not a scintillating offensive showing, and therefore not a scintillating defensive showing, but it was much better. And what I liked is the Saints looked like they got better the same way they got better last year, which was they don't reduce their scheme so much, but they simplify it from snap to snap. They do a lot of different coverages, but they're not overly complex coverages right now. They just change them up steadily, but they had a cover two was what they kind of went back to, and they fell back on against the Giants. And I think that's a good approach for them. Mm-hmm. That helps them. They were playing with the lead, so you can't just line up and cover two this week against Washington. You're going to have to do a little bit more. But the Saints are at their best when they're simple yet diverse, and they looked simple and diverse against the Giants. So I'll be eager to see. This is a different challenge, Joe. Remember, New York, they want to beat you with their wide receivers, especially with Evan Ingram out of the lineup. So that brings Lattimore into the equation, and it kind of plays to the Saints' strengths a little bit, although they're kind of weak at corner right now. But the Redskins, they're going to try to beat you with their running backs and tight ends over mm-hmm. the middle. So can the Saints' linebackers cover this week?
Yeah, that'll be interesting. And obviously, as Andy mentioned, Drew Brees is probably going to get the all-time passing yardage record in that game, which is a nice thing. And we can all celebrate Drew Brees. Jenny Brentis had a nice piece on him on the MMQB earlier this week, sort of looking back over his career. And obviously, people had nice things to say about Drew Brees. Last game, we're going to...
Oh. Hey, wasn't that weird to see Brees in his old Chargers uniform in that picture we had on that story?
Yeah, I dug through all the old archives. Those uniforms,
that was you.
Yes, those uniforms are strange. Because we have at SI, we have so many amazing pictures from years and years. So when you do something with the least bit of like historical angle on it, you just end up digging through the archives for a while, and there's a lot of cool stuff there. But you look back, early 2000s. The shoulder pads are just, they're so huge that everyone's so drastically different looking at that point.
Yeah, your pads were big. Pads just get smaller and smaller, don't they? And then the NFL instituted a rule that you have to have your knee pads now on. You can't just wear thigh pads and only thigh pads anymore. But it seems like a lot. I know it's Patrick Peterson the other day in the Seahawks game. It had his knees totally exposed. It seems like that rule is just getting ignored. Maybe I'm wrong.
I did not know that was a rule, nor did I notice Patrick Peterson's knees, but I would have if I knew that was a rule. Is that a rule, Andy?
Yes, they made it a rule a few years ago that all that those padding, that padding's mandatory.
Okay.
I don't know how much they've enforced it, though. Like, how do you make it, like, if Patrick Peterson wears his knee pads, but he hikes up his pants so that his pad's above his kneecap and therefore not really serving as a pad at all? Because these guys like their knees uncovered because I think they feel they're faster when they do that. What do you do about that? It's small things. It's not like the guy's brain health or something here, but the NFL does want you to wear your pads. They say they want you to wear their pads.
Well, they want your uniform to be uniform. That's why they send out those letters
if you don't
have the right uniforms.
I get annoyed. I know people think I'm a killjoy because I'm the guy that doesn't want Max Williams to get to play guard and catch a ball, or Montgomery gets to wear 88 for Green Bay and play running back. I like the uniform rules, and I get annoyed when I see guys violating them on TV, where someone's socks aren't the right height or color. I love that the NFL is stringent about that.
I will have to introduce you to my friend who, as an intern for the NFL, his job was to send out those letters. Physically, not
really?
Like type them up, but make sure they were addressed to the proper player and
okay. Yeah,
stuff
that's
the
what I wanted to know.
That sort of thing.
That's what I wanted to know. Interesting.
He's a hero. this is last one we're going to break down. This is Cincinnati and Miami. And when Andy sent this to me and said he wanted to break down this game, and I said, why do you want to break down this game? Not that I don't want to talk about these teams, but, Andy pointed out they're both 3-1. Someone's leaving this game 4-1, unless they both leave 3-1-1. But, let's start with the Dolphins. I'll just ask Rhea, what happened to this team last week in New England?
I would chalk it up to just one of those days. Their defense was not horrible early on, but it didn't get off the field, and so it got gradually worse as the game went along. They had some penalties. It was not a great defensive showing, and their offense, because the defense couldn't get off the field, their offense wasn't on the field very much, and it didn't establish any rhythm. And when the Dolphins struggle, which last year was for the first half of the season, they're not a good third down and long team. And I don't think Adam Gase is a very aggressive or confident play caller in third and long. It's a lot of screens and dink and dunk and let's live to fight another day stuff. The Dolphins gotten a ton of third and long situations last week, variety of reasons. So a bunch of little things went wrong and it snowballed into one big bad performance. I don't think this team's as bad as that. They might not be as good as 3-0 suggested coming in, but they're much better than the team we saw certainly against New England.
Well, what's your read? Let's talk about Bengals offense versus Dolphins defense. What's your read on the Bengals so far? The Bengals' Achilles heel the last couple of years has been the offensive line. They're not playing at a level that they were at when Andrew Whitworth was there and all those guys. But the offensive line is holding its own, which, as we talked about all this offseason, that's kind of what, that's your goal. You can function on offense if your offensive line can play above a certain baseline, and the Bengals are finally back over that baseline.
They are, and to get them back under the baseline, if I'm a defense, I'm looking at finding ways to power rush the right side of that Bengals O-line. Alex Redmond, who, by the way, if you can ever Google Alex Redmond, their right guard, he's the least NFL-ish looking player I've ever seen in my life. I saw when I went and did the thing with Vontaze Burfict last year, and I pulled the PR lady aside. I said, just who's the guy in the glasses over there? Because I could tell you it was a player, but he did not look like a player. And she said, yeah, he's a fascinating guy. We're fascinated by him. But he's not a great at the bull rush, Alex Redmond. And then Bobby Hart at right tackle next to Redmond, he struggled with that at times too against Atlanta. So if I'm Miami, I'm looking at Cameron Wake, and then they've got a pretty good D-tackle rotation. Akeem Spence is part of that. Jordan Phillips no longer is. That's a good player getting cut for them. I was surprised by that. But I would look at power rushing against that right side of the Bengals O-line.
How much of this, and actually this is going to transition into our mailbag here because we have a similar question along these lines with an AFC North team, but look, the Bengals put up a lot of points against the Falcons. They put up a lot of points against the Ravens on a night on which the Ravens lost C.J. Mosley on a short week. They put up, you know, they put up 34 against the Colts. Colts are not as bad defensively as we thought, but also, you know, 7 of those points came from the defense.
Yeah,
I'm not, you know, I don't think anyone's sitting here thinking the Bengals are going to put up 35 points every week, but. Are we going to see sort of a sharp regression into what they were last year? Is it simply a matter of, you know, when Andy Dalton sort of, when he struggles, when he gets to that place, it tends to snowball a little bit. Yeah. Is it as simple as that? Or do they essentially have a better structure than they used to have, you know, since the days of that the consecutive playoff appearances?
Yeah, I think they have a little better structure. The three things that make you say, hey, maybe this can continue, because Dalton has played very well. I mean, he's throwing the ball well.
Mm-hmm.
But the three things is we've touched on one already, the O-line, even though I think they're vulnerable on the right side a little bit. Yes, it is a better O-line, and that matters. Two, and he hasn't been in the lineup lately, but Joe Mixon's a big-time running back, and he's going to give him some dimension.
Yeah.
They're only going to get better with him. And the third thing, Gary, is Tyler Boyd all of a sudden has become one of the league's better underneath receivers. And when I watched him as a rookie, I thought this guy's going to be a top 3 or 4 slot receiver within the next year or so. Now, he did some things last year that he wasn't the most mature guy, and I think they lost some faith in him and they weren't comfortable with him on the field at times. Staff's been changed, though. It's now Bill Lazor's offense. They've got different position coaches there in some spots. Boyd's getting to play again, and he's looking really, really, really good. They're killing people out of the slot. Boyd is there, and A.J. Green has more slot production than he's ever had. It's a bad week for the Dolphins to lose Bobby McCain, who gives them some versatility as a slot guy. Now they're going to have to rely solely on Minka Fitzpatrick in the slot.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like that would alleviate some of the pain of losing Tyler Eifert as well, now that they have that consistent production as, you know, coming out of the slot with Boyd as a possession receiver.
Yeah, and that's what he is. He's a possession receiver in a good way, a great way. The ability to separate at the top of a short route. He's got some shiftiness to his movement. And if you think about that, what we're describing is a guy that can get open at the shallow levels. And if I'm Andy Dalton and I'm starting to feel, not that Andy Dalton thinks of himself like this, but I'm starting to feel bad Andy Dalton-y for a little bit here. And, oh, here comes an interception. You know, having a guy that can get open underneath shallow, that's a nice thing to have. That's something he hasn't had before either, necessarily. Not like that.
Yeah. Yep. And, by the way, should note, Joe Mixon – at least at the time of our taping, is on pace to return to the lineup this week after the minor knee cleanup. So more good news for the Bengals there.
Well, you know he's healthy because he ran down the sideline and jumped up and down about every single good play that they had at Atlanta last week. He was the most enthusiastic injury non-participant that I've ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe that's why they're throwing him back out there. They didn't even check with the doctors at that point.
Yeah, or just he's safer out there than he is on his own volition on the sideline, too.
Exactly.
I've heard Joe Mixon's like a little bit like a young teenager at times. So, you know, I'm sure you want to give him some boundaries, and maybe his boundaries are just go play football.
Yeah.
Don't think about it, Joe. Just go. He is a great talent. I hope he does well.
He is. Let's open up the mini mailbag here. We're starting with one from Nick. This is a very blunt question. How good are the Ravens? Gary, you called them one of the not-so-good teams. Andy, you think Lamar is going to start. In all seriousness, how good are they really? They just had 20 awful minutes after C.J. Mosley went down in that Thursday night game. I don't know if you take it.
You're the one that you know, yours is harder than mine.
Mine was harder than yours. But I will say, I don't think anyone, if you're a Ravens fan, you don't want me praising this team. Look what I did to the Bucks. I bashed the Bucks. They went off to that fast start, and then we started praising them, and look what happens now. They're getting beat by 70 points in Chicago. I thought the defense was going to be better than it was down the stretch last year, and that was my bigger problem with it. I'm not I'm not necessarily surprised that they're better offensively. I think they have better talent at the skill positions. I think they have a better, more creative system that they're running for Joe Flacco now with all the tight ends and you know, a little more throwing out of run looks type of deals, sometimes throwing two guards as Andy loves so much. But, you know, it's I thought they'd be better offensively. My issue with the Ravens, I didn't think they would be dominant defensively, which is what I thought they'd be a year ago, and they weren't, especially down the stretch last year.
Yeah, their defense has been better than I thought as well. And I don't know why. I mean, I thought it'd be pretty good. I don't know why I didn't have higher hopes for them, because it's not they don't have a Tyler Boyd on there where someone's all of a sudden playing better or like a maniac and we didn't think he could. Their safeties, we knew they were good. They were going to disguise a lot with their safeties. We knew they had fundamentally sound, strong run defenders, which they have. Mm-hmm. And I think we both liked Marlon Humphrey moving up into the lineup as a number – well, really, they're number one corner now. Theoretically, they should only get better having Jimmy Smith come in.
Jimmy Smith is back, yep.
Play ahead of Carr, maybe Brandon Carr, who's played pretty well. So yeah, maybe we just missed on I was down on their offense a little bit, and their offense has been better than I thought, and they've done it the way I was hoping they would do it. It's like you said, they're throwing out of running formations. They use a lot of multi tight end, which they did a year ago, but now they've got a lot of purpose and designs exploiting that. And they're going to get Hayden Hurst healthy at some point too. Baltimore right now, I don't know if there's a way to argue that they don't look like the best team in the AFC North.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And again, I don't want to go nuts here. They are 3-1. I could see them finishing 9-7 and missing the postseason. I could see them maybe climbing all the way to 10 or 11 wins and winning this division. But yeah, they probably are a little bit better. They're certainly better than the not so good that I described them as recently. But yeah, they're good. They're good. I wonder if this is their ceiling, but they are good right now. Next one's from this is Nick from London. Andy, are you seeing opposing teams do anything on defense to take away moving pockets, play action, and the similar that the Texans used to help Deshaun Watson last year? Or does this just look like Bill O'Brien returning more to his philosophical core, perhaps with more confidence in his quarterback?
It's a great question, because we talked about, and I wrote about, that they've done moving pockets and pre-snap motion about one-third as much in Houston this year as they did last year in the games that Watson played. It's been much more traditional, deeper drop back, and they got back to some of the pre-snap motions, you know, the college-type stuff. They got back to it a little bit against Indianapolis. I asked Bill O'Brien why they're doing it that way. I was shocked he wouldn't share his intimate football secrets with me. And so I don't have an answer to that if someone's doing something to take it away. What I've always liked about it, though, is I don't know if you can take away a moving pocket defensively. You could probably get a coordinator to say, oh, yeah, here's 12 very tiny things that are hugely important that we do. But the moving pocket, it's an entire offensive line moving. It's all the receivers flowing to one side of the field, and it's the QB on the move. Defenses are not built to stop that necessarily, because as a defense, you have to build your pass rush under the assumption that the quarterback's going to be a stationary target. Otherwise, you just get into guessing games, and it's hard. So that's why moving pockets so often combat a good pass rush, is you just don't have time to scheme a pass rush against it, because otherwise you don't know exactly how or where the pocket will move. I think Houston needs to be doing more of this stuff, though. They're putting more pressure on Watson by not simplifying, and I don't want to say simplifying, but for him it's simplifying, because it plays to his strengths so well doing these college tactics. I'm surprised they've gotten away from it a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I you have to think maybe the knee injury plays into that a little bit, or maybe they just, you know, they are ripping the Band-Aid off a little bit faster than we thought they would.
But should they even be ripping the Band-Aid off? I mean, why you got Deshaun Watson, that's what he does, that's what he is. Why try to I didn't think he'd be great in the NFL, because I thought you can't mold him into a traditional pro QB. And Houston said, well, last year, said, well, it doesn't matter, we're going to mold ourselves into an untraditional offense and be great, and they were. Why wouldn't that be the long-term plan with Watson then?
I think they're leaning system over player. Leaning.
That's you don't do that with your quarterback. That's the wrong position to lean system over player.
All right. I'm just saying that's the sense I get from
I'm not scolding you or anything. I'm just
you seem very upset with me, Andy.
Your system ultimately takes on the – if you're doing it right, it takes on the shape of your quarterback. We say that all the time.
Let's get one more question in here. This is one that I want to hear your answer on this, Andy. This is from Christopher. If you were running the Los Angeles Chargers, what would you give up for Justin Tucker? What would you trade for him?
I would give up – I'd probably give up a third-round pick.
Yeah,
give up a second even.
I was going to say I'd give up a two.
I think I might as well.
Which is why I never – look, they were wrong on Roberto Aguayo down in Tampa. He ended up being really bad. But philosophically, I did not mind using a second-round pick on a kicker if you think that kicker is going to be in upper echelon, top five type of kicker, which obviously they did.
Yeah.
And obviously they were wrong.
I agree. We've seen it backfire on some teams drafting before, but that you have to. We're talking about transferring guys, translating them to the NFL, though. It's different kicking in college. A field goal posts are wider apart in college. A hash marks are wider, so you're at a totally different angle. It's actually a harder angle in college. Tucker's such a known entity. Did I tell you when I was at the Hall of Fame game, I got stuck on the elevator with Flacco, Suggs, Ed Reed, Bisciotti, John Harbaugh, and Tucker. They were all there for Ray Lewis's speech.
Yes.
And the elevator was exceptionally slow. So, we were stuck on the elevator. But somebody teased Tucker about being a kicker still. I think it was Suggs.
That's the burden you carry as a kicker. But the other thing I want to say about Justin Tucker's not even 30 years old yet. I mean, he's going to be in the league for like 12 more years, probably at an elite level for like 8 to 10. So I would give up a two if I thought I had a pretty good team, or even if I didn't have a pretty good team, I might give up a two for him.
I admire him. By the way, he doesn't look like a kicker when you're on an elevator with him either. He looked he's a bigger guy. I don't know if that means anything at all, but for what that's worth, I'm a big Justin Tucker fan.
Yeah, yes, you are. He's going to convert you after all.
If they ever invent, like, I have a friend who says that you should get 4 points for hitting the goalpost as a field goal kicker, like it's a more precise shot,
and then putting it through.
Well,
or just hitting it.
She hasn't gone that far. She just thinks she stops at four, and I say, yeah, but what, does it have to go in or out? Or, you know, I usually just dismiss it because there's no positive end to that conversation. That's just going to go down a fanboy conversation for me. And anyway, though, if they ever implement that kind of rule, I'm trading a first-round pick for Justin Tucker, because not only does he make everything, he is right down the pipe on everything he kicks.
It really is. If you had the the stanchion that held up the uprights, if that just extended
yes,
as high as the goalposts, he would hit it on most of his kicks. It's absurd.
He absolutely would. And that's funny. Maybe we can end on this note. The last time I saw someone hit the stanchion on a kick, I believe it was in a Baltimore game. Do you remember that, where it went over the field goal post, hit the back of the stanchion, and then ricocheted back onto the field, and everybody thought that it was a missed field goal, and they reviewed it, or they looked at it and said, no, it actually went through and then bounced back out. Do you remember?
I do vaguely remember that.
I think that was – I'm pretty sure, and this is the exact kind of thing that our listeners will – tweet to us, and we love them. I'm pretty sure that was a Baltimore game that happened.
It's a great segment. Gary and Andy vaguely remember things. Can you fill in the blanks here for us? All right, that's a wrap for this one. Thanks, as always, to researchers Reed Foster and Ryan Taylor, who make us sound smart every week. Thank you to producer Shelby Royson, all the guys at Games 13. I'm at the new studio this week. It's beautiful. It's fantastic. I sound like Donald Trump for a second. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB Deep Dive NFL Podcast. You really are the best. Andy and I will be back in your feed first thing Monday morning to break down all the Sunday action. I will actually be back Friday with the MMQB Gambling Show. That's myself, Jimmy Traina, and Scott Grambling. If you go back one in your feed, you'll get Jenny Brentis and Connor Orr joining Albert Breer, breaking down the biggest news from around the league. We humbly ask that you subscribe to the MMQB Podcast Network wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys Monday morning.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.